The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it even says avoid legal snags by telling people they're being recorded. Well, I said, my phone, it never mind, doesn't really matter. You're a busy guy, so I'm going to do this. And I've got a, this is going out tonight, so you'll forgive me, I hope, if I do the intro.
No.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. There's been a lot happening in the cannabis world the past few weeks. House Bill 3884, the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Equity Act of 2019, was recently approved by the House Judiciary Committee by an overwhelming 24-10 vote. The chair of that committee, Representative Gerald Nadler, is the lead sponsor of this bill, and he says he expects it to go to the floor of the House sometime this session, and he expects it to be approved by the House. The Senate, well... Anyway, to talk about that, to talk about other stuff, I've got on the line with me now Ngayo Bilom. He's a comedian, a musician, a writer, an actor, an activist, a juggler, and a publisher. According to Wikipedia, he co-hosted Cannabis Planet and published West Coast Cannabis Magazine. He writes a column in Sacramento News and Review, where he answers questions from readers about marijuana and its politics. He is a very, very funny man. But he's also somebody whose opinion I respect greatly and who is one of the smartest people in this marijuana issue. Ngayo Bilom, how the heck...
You sound so fancy. I'm great. After that introduction, how could I be anything other than great? Man, it's a lot to live up to. Apparently, I've done a lot. I'm shocked. Shocked.
Man, can be only comedians who speak truth to power, and that's how this movement... You know, you've been a leader for a long time, and it's... By gosh, time that people acknowledge that. Let's start off with some of the biggest news of this week, and that's House Bill 3884, this week, of this month,
is
possibly
big
of this
news,
year.
Doug?
Well, the House Judiciary Committee approved a marijuana legalization measure by a vote of 24-10. The chair of the Judiciary Committee, Jerry Nadler, is the lead sponsor. When he says he expects this to go to the floor of the House, you can almost, you know, I'm not a gambling person, but you could probably put money on that.
And sure.
But what do you think?
I'm not holding my bong hit. Like, it. How many times is something going to get somewhere and then nothing happens? Like, even if it does get through the House, which it does have a good chance of getting the House, and that's a good first step, but I don't think that Moscow Mitch McConnell and all his cronies are, you know, how many bills are they holding up already? 200 something bills have come from the House that Mitch has refused to put on the Senate floor. So why would they do this? I mean, you think the Republicans would see it's in their best interest when, according to the latest Pew poll, 67%, I think it is, of Americans think cannabis should be legal now, right? But I'm pretty sure they have other things on their plate or in their samovar. Well, that's funny to me because that's a Russian joke.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and in fact, it's worth pointing out there is a version of the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Equity Act, the MORE Act, in the Senate already. It's sponsored by Senator Kamala Harris.
Right.
Nothing's happened with it, and probably you're right. Nothing's going to because.
Yeah.
I remember a couple of years ago, they were talking a good game. And, you know, Dana Rohrabacher was talking himself blue in the face about how Republicans secretly believe in all this stuff. And
guy also has problems. This is the challenge, I think, is on the list of priorities that Republicans want to get done. Cannabis legalization is not high on the list. I mean, one, private prison industry loves cannabis crimes. Two, they have bigger things to worry about. They have to prop up a failing president and a bunch of other things. And I don't, and as much as, you know, the thing is, like, if they were to decriminalize and deschedule cannabis federally, I think it would be a big feather in their little Republican caps. And I think it would bring around some poor misguided people who, you know, don't have any other reason to support Trump, but they'd be like, well, he legalized weed, blah, 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 blah. So it would be a good thing for them to do. But, you know, I try to be even-handed about these things. But when was the last time Republicans did a good thing?
The sound of crickets in response to that question. Well, and you know, they don't even need to. Frankly, we've already seen they don't really need to do bloody anything. For the last how many years have we seen this stuff about? Oh, he's got a secret plan to legalize, or oh, they're secretly behind us. Like, you know, stop it. I'm done. No more secrets. Secret is not. Yeah. Be public. Vote yes. Simple.
Yes. It's not that big of a challenge, and I don't think we're going to see any legalization until and unless we see a sweeping change in the Senate and the presidency, and if we get some Democrats or some progressives or some Greens or some social Democrats in there, we maybe have a better chance. But as it stands now, I'm not optimistic. I'm not the young idealist I was in 1992 when we thought Bill Clinton was going to legalize weed. Which he could have done. He could have done it in 96. Obama could have done something. He could have descheduled it in 2008 and 2012. So there's billions of dollars to be made now. We know Republicans love billions of dollars. But if they can't really control it or get their billions of dollars first, I don't see how interested they would be in it. They already get billions of dollars from the private prison industry, from locking people up, from utilizing drug prisoners as a form of legalized slavery. This is, you know, and I know I sound crazy leftist and progressive right now, and I am most of the time, but these are the things, these are the bigger issues. And I want to be like, oh my God, this is such a great first step, and it's gonna pass. It's not. And if it does, I'll buy weed for everybody. But as it stands now, I am not optimistic.
No, I have to agree. Well, I mean, it's dead in the water once it gets across to the Senate. Hope to God it actually does pass the House. That'll at least
even get out the House.
You don't think?
I don't know. There's too many people who get too much money from weed being illegal. You can make more money from weed being legal, but you'd have to set up new revenue streams. And these guys already have a thing happening. So why would they even want to change it? It's not affecting them. Right? Rich white kids don't go to jail for weed, so it's not going to bother any of those guys.
You do have a good point. Like I say, smart man. Now, on the other hand, you've also got the legal weed industry that is doing its own campaign contributions. Some of these companies are, you know, have massive, I mean, their stock value, okay, they're horribly inflated. They're not worth even a fraction of what their stocks.
Don't get me started on those guys. I mean, I'm glad they're spending money to lobby and do this other stuff, but those guys also have problems, and they, you know.
Well, I'm not going
to. Shooting an algorithm and $5 million behind you doesn't mean you know anything about the cannabis industry or cannabis culture or even how to grow good cannabis, which is, you know, you think that would be the first step, would be to have good weed. But these guys don't seem to understand that.
Well, that leads me to the next question, which is about the California industry. There have been a wave of layoffs in the industry over the past couple of months. Some big companies like Flocana, Ease, and MedMen have all announced layoffs. Some are saying this is a sign that the industry's in trouble and overregulation. Others, more skeptical, people like myself, are saying that this is nothing but hypocrisy and cost-cutting in an attempt to boost profits so that the owners can make more money and maybe the next investment wave, the investors say, ooh, you fired a bunch of people, you must be a great company, let's pour a few million dollars into your weed business. But what's happening then in California? Enough of me.
I think there's a lot of different factors for it. First of all, I'd like to say I feel bad for all the people at Flocana and some of the cats at Jetty Extracts, because those two companies seem to have the right idea, and they got a decent amount of hippies and whatnot on their staff, and so they seem to be wanting to do the right things. A lot of these other guys, they just showed up with money and thought they were going to jump in the middle and take over everybody and have a little small weedopoly or whatever, and that's not how it goes. Cannabis has been decentralized due to its very nature, right? When it was federally illegal, it's been a decentralized industry for forever, and so to think that you can just come in and take it over. Have you ever hung out with hippies? Do you know how obstinate these people are? Do you know how headstrong hippies are? Like, you can't do that. This is, and especially if you're going to overregulate, and California has completely overregulated the industry. They've overtaxed the industry. They're raising the taxes again in 2020, which is not helping anyone in the legal regulated market. I mean, if it's cheaper to buy it from the black market, why not buy it from the black market? And I know you could point to the vape crisis and be like, well, you know, unregulated, untested products can cause health problems and severe health problems. And that's true. But flowers, I mean, you know, if slightly badly grown weed was going to kill you, we'd all be dead from the 1995 or some of the droughts in the 90s and the 80s. So weed is still weed, and you can still find underground, organic, fantastic weed everywhere for way cheaper than you can get it in the club. I mean, even if the price is the same, even if it's $40 an eighth from the weed man and it's $40 an eighth at the weed club is going to add another 20 to 30% in taxes on it. So now your eighth is $60 where it used to be $40, right? And so what are you going to do? You, if you're working in this gig economy, I mean, listen, I feel like I'm on mushrooms right now. It's all tied together, man. Everything is everything. But if you got two minimum wage jobs, saving $20 is important to you, right? And you need a little weed to get through your day sometimes because these people out here stress you out. So, I mean, I think they're going about it all wrong. I feel like Oregon had the right idea where they didn't overregulate, they didn't overtax. I felt bad for the growers because the prices dropped precipitously, but that also pushed out why are you going to call the weed man? He's the weed man's not going to be cheaper than the club. The club's going to sell you a joint for $1 and sell you an eighth for $15. An eighth of pretty good weed for $15. And the growers don't make what they used to make, but the industry is I would say thriving out there as opposed to what's happening in California. I mean, hell, 70% of California cities and counties still prohibit weed businesses. You know, you can't always find a weed club if you're in Modesto or Fresno or some of these other towns. So I don't know how they expect the market to grow if access isn't opened up.
I, of course, loyal listeners know I live up here in Oregon, so I can only say you're absolutely right. It's so much nicer.
I mean, Oklahoma's medical cannabis law, it was one of the coolest things about Oklahoma's medical cannabis law is that they were like, no, cities and counties cannot prohibit cannabis cultivation and cannabis businesses. They've got to figure out a way to work with everybody, right? It's like it's a weird analogy, but it's like a strip club. You got to have a strip club. Like if the state allows strip clubs, cities can't prohibit it. Right, it's a First Amendment thing. It's an access thing. It's a freedom and liberty thing. So, I think California could not have messed it up any more than if they had actually tried to mess it up.
I don't know. I give your legislators more credit than that. I think they could easily have screwed it up even worse. But
I don't know if they could have because, you know, and also this they're going about it again the wrong way. They're like, well, we're not making the money we thought we were going to make. So now we got to raise the taxes. And they're like, well, it's to keep up with inflation. But really, it's not. It's just you're going to kill the golden goose. Right. The underground scene is thriving out here. There are so many different we used to call them like farmers markets. Now they call them sessions. There's so many different sessions you can go. If you still have your medical letter of recommendation, you can find a session on Instagram, probably, you know, half hour from your house. And you can just drive out there and you can buy all the unregulated weed you want for super cheap. Right. And you can talk to people who grew it and you can talk to the guys who have it. And it's a way more cannabis-centered, cannabis culture-centered vibe than you get in a lot of these sterile clubs where the people working there don't even know anything about weed. These guys are all brand new, and they just see it as a business and not a lifestyle, which I guess is cool. But even the guy who runs the liquor store or runs the bookstore, they know something about books. They know something about liquor, you know? And these cats, they just know money and units and market share and disruption, but they don't understand. They don't have a fundamental understanding. I feel all Obi-Wan Kenobi, you perceive the Force as little as a spoon perceives the taste of food, sort of thing.
Just to remind folks, you're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, and my guest here with me on Skype is the Jedi Master of Weed, the Chronosaur, Mr. Ngaio Bilum, activist, writer, and comedian. Of course, professional comedian.
Diplomat himself.
Got to, I'm not going to shift gear. Let's stay with, kind of. One of the things that you've been involved with over the last few years, the Minority Cannabis Business Association, you are outspoken on issues involving equity and social justice within the cannabis industry and, well, in general. Talk to me. How are things shaping up? I mean, are we talking a good game and then falling short? Is anything actually happening?
Smoke a joint before I talk to you. You just pressing all my buttons today, man. I feel like Oakland is the only place doing it at least kind of right. They've definitely opened up some minority clubs. Their equity program seems to be proceeding apace. A lot of these other places up here in Sacramento, they are just now. They announced it 2 years ago, but it's really just now getting going, their equity program. But it's almost too late. They're not going to allow too many more licenses, and it's still going to cost you $200,000 to get in the game. So there's no black-owned clubs up here, right? And there's very few in San Francisco, and only a couple in Los Angeles, if there are any at all. Last time I was there, I think there was one or two, but I don't even know if they've shut down or whatnot. So I don't feel like the equity programs are doing what they're supposed to do. And I don't know if that's by design or just, what do they say? Never look for conspiracy when you can find incompetence. So I'm not sure what the whole plan is on that. And I wish it was better. I wish people would be more proactive about it. But I mean, up here in Sacramento, we got an FBI probe. We got Ukrainian money. We got accusations of bribery and money laundering. And, you know, and listen, things happen. Money gets involved. Big money gets involved. People look at clubs and they're like, oh, that's an easy way to make $1 million a year or whatnot. I mean, it brought in, I think, Sacramento clubs. There's 30 Sacramento clubs. They grossed about $140 million in gross sales last year. So you look at that and you're like, oh, my God, that's $5 million a club. That's a pretty good deal. But it's not. You know, that's not all profit. So I just wish it would be better. And I don't know what to do about it. I don't know how to change human nature. Greed is the one God that can never be appeased or even sated. It's the whole nature of greed worship.
You know, it's kind of related. I was talking with I was doing an interview not long ago with a professor from Fordham Law School, John Pfaff. We were talking about mass incarceration in prison, and actually, as he's telling me how his thinking in this has evolved, which, I mean, mass incarceration is the problem, but the root of that is this culture of mass punishment. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not just about incarceration. It's all the rest of it. It's like, oops, you fall short. We got to smack you down. And this idea of mass punishment. I mean, like I say, it's not the same, but it's similar what you're talking about. It's not just a question of changing the policy. It's a question of changing the mindset that's really pushing this stuff.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. I don't know what you can do about it. I don't know how to change human nature. I mean, when it comes to prison reform, some of the Scandinavian countries seem to have the better idea. It should be about rehabilitation and reforming people to help them become productive members, productive taxpaying members of society. But that's not, listen, if you have a private prison, then it is in your best interest to create more criminals. So why would you want to help someone not be a criminal? That's just going to eat into your profit. You want them to come back to jail. You want them to get out and come back 6 months later. They already know the routine, right? You don't want to never see them again. You want to see them as often as possible. And so that's just one of those things when it comes to prison reform. And I think private prison should be abolished. It's a farce. It's a farce and a scam.
Well, and it's not just the people with the private prisons. It's also the private companies that are vendors to the, you know, to the right. to the publicly owned prisons. It's the right. prison guards themselves. Some of them have, you know, like in California, for instance, they even have a union to
SOPA.
And you've got, I mean, yeah, it's okay, enough of my rant.
Exactly.
I want to hear from you because
sounds,
this is
those
fun
are the
stuff.
Sounds I make all the time too. It's like
Yeah. Well, and again, I wanted people get enough of my people get enough of my nasal whine and stammer. It's you that we want to hear from. You have a new writing gig that that a little bird told me about. Why don't you tell my listeners, what are you doing these days?
Yeah, so I'm the new social equity, cannabis equity writer for Emerald Media. They have a print magazine. They also have a really nice website. And I'm also starting, it should be premiering, I think, in January, a new podcast. I think we're going to call it Equally High. And then it'll be focusing on social justice and social equality and cannabis equity issues throughout the nation. And we'll interview a bunch of people and talk about this and tell the stories and see what can be done. We'll discuss the successes and the failures and see what can be done to make the world a better place. I mean, my firm belief, like I got into cannabis activism. One, I really like weed, just in general, just the whole idea. I like the way it tastes. I like the way it smells. I like the way it's grown. I like all that stuff. But I also see cannabis activism as a social justice issue. That was one of the things I like about weed activism is you're like striking a blow on all kind of different fronts, right? You legalize weed. That's a blow for personal freedom, a blow for personal responsibility. It helps cops be less racist, right? If you can't just pull over kids, black and brown kids, because you smell weed or because you think they have weed on them, you can't just harass people for that anymore. These are all good first steps. We also have to take it further, right? Because the same people who are making money from throwing us in jail are now making money from selling us weed. And that's not fair, right? The people who used to have good jobs. I mean, you probably knew a cat or two who was the weed man. And I say weed man as a gender neutral term. I spell it with an M. Who was the weed man? Or spell it with a Y. You probably know the weed man who had to get a job at a dispensary after everything got legalized and set in because they couldn't make the money that they used to, at least in Oregon. California, the weed man is still doing all right. But that's, you know, you just want it to be better. And these guys just can't seem to get it together. And I don't think they really listen to anyone who knows. And maybe they do listen to those guys. I don't know. I've been to too many city council meetings and too many things where people make logical, thought out, persuasive arguments that make great sense. And then they're completely ignored. So what can you do about that? I used to be way more idealistic. They say a cynic is a lapsed idealist, an idolist. I'm also very idle. But they say a cynic is a disappointed idealist. And I think I'm entering into that phase of my career.
Yeah, but you know, you're going to still keep doing it. We're not going to stop. No, I mean, I know what you mean exactly. We're not going to quit, though.
You got to be here to change it. I mean, there's nothing you can do but to continue to fight against it. Like, you can't just give up. I haven't given up. I'm just, my eyes are a little more open about it.
I dig. There's a, you remember the PDQ Bach, the Professor Peter Schickele.
I love PDQ Bach.
Right. Do you remember this one saying he had? This saying is practically my motto. It should be my mantra. The ideas are like pollen. Once they're in the air, you never know who's going to sneeze.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. This is true.
Which is why it's so exciting. Sorry, but that's why it's so exciting to me, at least, that you're going to be doing this podcast and that you're working on this
good
equity
ideas
stuff.
Ideas are also like pollen because some people are just allergic to them. Okay, sorry. Continue.
You do have a point, but you know, that's fine. You're not going to, I realized a while back after I was in debate for the longest time and I never really figured it out until, not very long ago, but you're not in a debate. You're not really going to end up convincing the person on the other side. They're not ever going to just say, whoops, you know, you were right. We were wrong all this whole time. It's a competitive thing. They view it that way and they're not going to do that. But the judge. That's the person you're trying to convince. I mean, in policy, what we're trying to convince is the majority of folks who really haven't given it a thought and don't have a feeling one side or the other. I mean, if they're forced to, maybe they'll make up their mind and it might be a knee-jerk reaction in the wrong way. But if we can keep putting out good ideas and talking about, you know, calling people out for being jerks, I will never apologize for that, and and trying to, you know, promote people to just be better. I think, you know, eventually it's going to work. It, hell, you remember, I was on the phone with the reporter right before Elvi Musica got her federal marijuana card and became the third person in the country to legally receive medical pot. So I have a different perspective on progress, you know? It's like, we've been...
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, it's not that we haven't... Listen, we've come a long way, right? I can walk around California now with an ounce of weed in my pocket, standing in line at the Starbucks, and a whole bunch of cops can walk in, and my blood pressure does not change, right? I was sitting on the corner smoking a joint on K and 8th the other day, and two sheriffs walked by, and one of them just gave me the what's up nod. Hey, what's up? Hey, what's up, man? Like, that's great. They're letting people out of jail. This is all great. These are all a lot of great steps, but we could definitely do more, and people could definitely do better. And that's what I'm saying.
Well, and I think as long as you're out there encouraging it, it's going to happen. I'm going to say this is, again, my guest has been Ngaio Bilom, the comedian, activist, writer, and all that kind of stuff. We are coming up to the end of the half hour, so I got to ask you if you have some closing thoughts, and of course, give me all those social media things where people can find out where you are and what you're up to. And you perform a lot, so I need to ask you what you got going on in performance, too.
I do. When is this post? Tonight?
This is
going
on
there.
This will... this show will be first broadcast right before Thanksgiving. It'll be first broadcast on my birthday.
Okay. You got it. Happy birthday, Doug.
Well, thank you very much.
December 1st, I will be at a simple bar in Los Angeles on Cahuenga. Find it out. It's a free show. Come on out. It's a Sunday night. Follow me on all the social media, NGAIO420. That's on the Twitter and the Instagram mostly, although I lurk on the Snapchat. What else? You read my articles in the Sac News and Review and Emerald Media, and I'm the third most popular Ngaio, NGAIO, in the world. So just Google me and you can find out all the stuff. I gotta get my website up. I've been lazy. Oh, and listen to my latest album, Weedier and Sexier. You can stream it on all the popular streaming platforms.
One of my favorite comedians, a brilliant activist and writer, and a good friend. It is such a pleasure to have you on the show, man. Happy holidays to you.
Always a pleasure. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well, Mr. McVeigh.
That was my interview with Ngaio Bilom. He's a comedian, an activist, a journalist, and a good friend. If you have a chance to see him live, do it. That's it for this week. I want to thank you so much for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The executive producer of the Drug Truth Network is Dean Becker. Drug Truth Network programs are available by podcast. The URLs to subscribe are on the network homepage at drugtruth.net. Drug Truth Network has a Facebook page. Please give it a like. Drug War Facts is on Facebook, too. Give its page a like and share it with friends. Remember, knowledge is power. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.